Getting to know and becoming friends with Dr. Ben First and his wife, Mary, began in a pretty typical way, as my wife, Lucy, recalls.
I met Mary at a lunchtime at an elementary school where both of our children attended. Our sons, Alex and Jared, became friends, and we were often invited to their home. And both of our families got to know each other very well over the years.
Ben had already completed his residency at the Medical College of Georgia in Augusta after earning his doctorate in oral surgery at the University of Pennsylvania. He and Mary had moved to Landsbrook in a subdivision near ours in this community of 1,800 homes on Lake Tarpon.
The state issued its initial license to Ben to practice in the year 2000, and the 32-year-old opened his first office in nearby Newport Richey the next year. We hit it off as friends almost immediately. I led corporate communications for a national computer products distributor in the area, and that was obviously nothing like Ben's profession, yet we discovered so much in common. And despite being on different career paths, we often talked about work experiences and dealing with people, for example, and challenges associated with raising young kids was another connection. We just joked around all the time and became so close in the months and years that followed, and his practice grew rapidly and so did the company I worked for. Good times were rolling. Compared to some other doctors I met or knew, Ben was surprisingly down to earth.
They were almost like an exotic couple because Mary, with her Venezuelan background, and she had her kind of, in my opinion, exotic good looks and, you know, expensive dresses and shoes, and just the whole look was, I think, just sort of exuded wealth.
Ben's propensity for the finest clothing, Armani suits, and a button-down, charming personality that his own mother was convinced somehow got him across the University of Pennsylvania med school threshold despite somewhat average grades upon admittance.
I don't really remember that he came off as a know-it-all on every subject. I think that there was sort of an air of arrogance about him more than what he necessarily said. I think the most, I'd say, startling aspect of his personality is his quickness to get angry. He would be the suave, sophisticated, well-dressed, articulate doctor at one moment, and then become an opinionated and harsh sort of commentator on things that people were just talking about very casually. That was something that I thought was really odd, and I don't want to say suspicious, but a scary almost aspect of his personality. That bothered me, that turn on a dime hostility that he had sometimes. I believe it was one of his kids' birthdays. It was a celebration. It was always a celebration at the first house. It was always fun and entertaining, and I absolutely loved being there. But we were having a conversation, everything was light, the atmosphere was wonderful, and I made a comment about how hard teachers work and they deserve to be paid better, and Ben lost it. He just disagreed with me and talked about how they have 3 months off in the summer, which isn't technically true, and how, you know, they are paid what they deserve. And I thought, you know, here's a doctor who could afford his kids to send his kids to private school and is so harsh about the meager salaries that hardworking teachers earn. And there was something about his demeanor and the change in his expression and the look in his eyes. It wasn't even just what he said or that he objected to my feelings that teachers are underpaid. It was how he reacted that scared me. And it was a small moment in the many, many, you know, hours we spent with him, but it really had an impact on me. I kind of backed out of the conversation, changed the subject, I don't remember, but I never really felt comfortable with him after that moment.
Randy is one of the many friends we met through the frequent get-togethers Mary and Ben hosted. Here's what she observed about Ben's typical demeanor toward his wife.
talked to her degrading like my ex-husband talked to me. He didn't treat her nice or respectful. And I was treated that way too with my ex. I don't think he appreciated her. Nobody's perfect, but just appreciate that they're there and they're the mother of your children.
How do you think it affected her?
Oh, I know it killed her because I know Mary's very sensitive and I'm very sensitive, and it bothered me because she was always so nice and loving to him, and I don't think he appreciated that. Maybe she was too nice and too loving.
Why do you think she stayed with him?
Money. It's just easier.
And prestige, maybe, being a doctor's wife.
Yeah, she liked the money.
I firmly believe it was also for her children's sake, although Ben fell woefully short on that front as a father and husband. However, when Mary was in the hospital for Jared's birth, Ben literally saved her life. A tech apparently failed to properly administer the epidural Mary received. When she flatlined, alone in the room with Ben, he immediately recognized what happened, resuscitated her, and enabled both her and Jared to survive the trauma. And Ben's fortunes were on the rise, fueling his passion for fast cars and top-of-the-line trucks. He and Mary moved to another neighborhood outside of Landsbrook with a large lot on a preserve that featured a second-floor man cave, circular lap pool with island bridge, a spacious gazebo overlooking his assortment of targets and fake life-size animals to sharpen his accuracy with a high-powered and very lethal-looking crossbow that I feared would slice my fingers off if I tried using it more than the couple of times I did. The giant fire pit was adjacent to a small platform 20 feet up one of the trees in this playground of a backyard, complete with trails for various four-wheel vehicles in the garage. His arsenal of guns were kept in safes on the property and in his office, as well as on his hip or in the glove box. Ben was pretty particular sounding about gun safety, with his boys and talking to me. I was relieved to hear, at least then, that he would never take out a gun as a threat to anyone unless it was to use it in the event deadly force was needed. A common refrain I understand from gun owners. I asked my son Alex about his memory spending time around Ben and his family.
I mostly spent time with his kids, my friends, but he would pick us up from school and take us out to do different things. We'd do things with their family, or they would come over to our house, of course. But I got the impression from a young age that he was a man who had a lot to hide and was very private. I remember in particular going out, and he was trying to submit his name into a raffle or something, and he didn't want to give his real name to win something, but he eventually did. But that's something that I figured, well, why not? So I remember just small things. Another was, you know, he would explode and fly off the handle at small things, something small like a video game. One of his sons had erased his file on the Wii sports game, and he freaked out over it and blamed their mom and yelled at her and said, this kind of kids you're going to raise. So I saw anger, and they were really young.
I knew Ben loved all three of his sons, but unlike Mary, he really didn't know how to show it nearly enough. He told me about this struggle, weeping openly when we hung out at the second office he opened in 2010 in the more affluent Palm Harbor area. It was especially memorable because I never saw him cry before or ever again. The usually stoic and increasingly headstrong doctor broke down for several minutes, literally sobbing about being a terrible father and husband. I had to agree in my mind that he understood that too. I didn't need to say it. Here's what his oldest son, Jared, recalled as a young child.
My earliest memories, I'd say when we lived in Georgia, are probably my earliest memories, but he was in residency back then, so I never really saw him much until we moved to Florida. He basically had to live in the hospital for the first couple of years of my life. I mean, he was home a couple of times. It's just, most of my early memories are with my mother.
He's so driven and brilliant, really, to be able to get that far in his career. You really have limited memories of your dad until after he was a doctor. Is that right?
Yeah.
As we talked about, your dad really loved all of you. And he had some definite feelings as you got older and protective about you going to the military. And when you were younger, what were your memories of your dad? What was he like as a father?
That's a complicated one. He was, when he was around, he was all right. He just wasn't around very much, to be honest. I mean, I hate to say it like that, but I mean, he had moments where he was nice and sweet, like to cook sometimes, you know, but he just had bouts where he'd just kind of fall off the face of the earth. And I kind of got used to that as a kid.
Share with me what your feelings were as you're growing older. Is this the way a mom and dad are supposed to be, or were you conflicted, confused?
I knew that something was wrong. I resented him for a long time. I was angry at him.
What triggered that anger?
Just the way, you know, they were fighting all the time. And then I would just, you know, every now and then I just wouldn't see him for a week or a month. And it was very like, when I would see him up until I was maybe like 16, honestly, up until the divorce, I would see him very like off and on. Like I was never used to seeing him in the house for an extended period of time. I mean, it almost got to the point where he actually stayed in the house for a little while, and it was kind of like a very weird feeling. Like it was almost like some random guy was in the house. It was like I really wasn't used to seeing him very often. Sometimes he would be gone for like a week or two, and then I'd finally see him in the house after my mother tracked him down, and he would just be passed out on the couch or my mother's bed or something. And then just like that, the next day when he sobered up, he'd be gone again.
At the time, did you blame him for the rocky upbringing and the constant fighting?
I did.
I'm so sorry that you had to endure that. I was hoping to hear he was a little more loving. Like you said, he had those more endearing moments, but they were few and far between, it sounds like.
Yeah. I mean, unbeknownst to me at the time, he went to rehab once or twice, mostly through my mother's forcing. And at the same time, he also had his habits that he likes to attend to. And they were pretty obvious, even as a preteen or, you know, it's the internet. You learn about things very quickly these days. So he wasn't very good at hiding things.
What were you learning from the internet?
Obviously, you know, an 8 to 12-year-old doesn't know much about sex or infidelity or anything like that. But I knew just from going through his stuff as a nosy kid, I'd see, you know, like numbers of random women in his, because he kept that stuff in like his, like it was really easy to find like just like random bits of female clothing in his stuff that obviously wasn't my mother's, you know, like you would find like scribbled numbers of random women and his like, you know, just like random bits of money that he had. It was just a lot. Like, you know what he was up to a lot of the time, unfortunately. I distinctly remember at least seeing a list of 10 different numbers of his scribbles. And I knew his scribbles. They're always very, his handwriting, I know. And it was just like one little tiny piece. It was like buried under his sock drawer. I remember because I was going through his stuff one day because I was angry at him. And I was angry that he didn't come home again. He had promised he was going to take me hunting. And he never did. And I went through his sock drawer and I found he was just so bad at hiding anything because some of his clothes still smelt like perfume. That was the thing. It always smelled like he tried to mask it with his cologne, but you could still smell the perfume. And that was one of the key points of their fighting, because my mother would find this after me. I would never tell her I looked through his stuff, but I did. It had to be hundreds, probably. I mean, that sounds extreme, but I mean, he was a decent looking guy. He was very social and he was a doctor. So, I mean, it wasn't really hard.
Upon asking Mary, Ben's wife of 17 years, how many affairs she suspected.
Hundreds. Ben was... could be a sexaholic, you know. He was infatuated with, like, misbehaving.
That misbehavior spanned 2 decades he was licensed to practice as an oral surgeon in Florida. Drug and rehab stints dating back to his early years as a surgeon, one imposed by his own mother in 2003. Repeatedly abusing the nitrous oxide supplies in his Newport Richey and Palm Harbor offices. Hospitalized for 3 days in 2011 for a related hallucinatory psychotic breakdown. The well-documented violence against women, mandatory participation multiple times in what's called the Impaired Practitioners Program of Florida to protect his interests and public well-being.
Ben's hunting buddy, Donnie, wondered about the most looming question of all.
How did he get a medical license? You know, and how did this keep going on in the end? Shouldn't have a medical license, especially because he could self-medicate, which is the worst part about it, which is what happened, I'm sure.
It was interesting that Ben never wanted to push any of that extreme or lurid lifestyle my way. Although he frequented strip clubs, he knew I had no interest, although I did agree to drive Mary to his favorite such place one night on US 19 because she wanted to see if he was there, and if not, talk to the women inside to ask if they had seen him. Apparently, she was somewhat known there. I waited anxiously in the car for, seemed like forever, I guess it was 15 or 20 minutes, shaking my head about the scenario. Ben didn't turn up, but he had fallen for one of those ladies at the strip club and asked her to, I couldn't believe it, marry him, even though he was still married at the time. He was actually serious, in actual love, he told me, but she nicely turned him down.
I mean, he was a quirky guy. Ben always was quirky, you know? It just was, but it wasn't a bad thing.
Hunting buddy Donnie wondered about Ben's tendency to get lost on the 10,000 acres a friend owned where they hunted in Georgia. That's a lot of land, but they all knew the terrain, and Ben typically wasn't even far from the lodge.
I would say to my joke was, I said, you went to school for 12 fucking years. You can't remember two lefts and a right. I mean, I just don't get it. Not lying, 20 times. And there's sometimes I had to go get a tractor or a bulldozer to pull him out that he would get. One time he got stuck, not even on a road. He was just in the middle of trying to drive through a swamp. He thought the road was there. And he wasn't drunk and he wasn't messed up. Shot 2 deer, had him in the back of the truck. It was like 9 o'clock at night. I said, Ben, it took me an hour to find him. I found him walking. And then it took me another hour to find the truck because he couldn't find his way back to where he left the truck. He was just that way. He had common sense smarts, kind of just wasn't there with him all the time, you know? And the truck was only 300 yards away, but it's the middle of the night. I mean, I'm looking around and finally my headlights hit something, you know? He's in the middle. He just drove right into the middle of a swamp, right off a road, right into the middle of a swamp.
As time went on, Ben was losing his way in surgery as well. He had many stellar online reviews over the 18 years he was licensed as a doctor in Florida. However, here are 2 posted on the same site, back-to-back in 2018, just a few months before he murdered his girlfriend, Larice, and took his own life.
This was the most horrific experience. He claims to be a surgeon, but does not monitor patients. I woke up in a seizure-like state, and he sent me home to die in septic shock. This man should be on the 11 o'clock news and incarcerated. He delivers propofol in the Conrad Murray style. I am hoping to save lives as I was near death in ICU fighting for my life after he injected me with propofol. Run as far as you can.
I'm not sure if the Medical Board of Florida or anyone else responsible for overseeing Ben's activities was aware of the patients expressing these alarming remarks.
Dr. First performed 3 dental implants on my wife. All 3 were implanted at the wrong location or angles and had to be surgically removed by another practitioner because both of Dr. First's offices closed when he was incarcerated. Dr. First signed a reimbursement agreement with me, but never paid and filed for bankruptcy 1 week later. Beware, this man ruined my wife's life for several years.
In the next episode, you'll learn what enabled Ben year after year whenever he did encounter more likelihood of losing his medical license. The state of Florida's program for impaired practitioners, euphemistically called Professionals Resource Network, or PRN, protecting doctors in maniacal straits more so than the patients they serve or even the public outside the walls of their practices. This story reaches beyond those shadows of secrecy into law enforcement failings too. It may be easy to blame Ben, but he couldn't stop himself from himself or his victims. I should have turned him in myself, but I didn't think he would hurt anyone else besides himself. It seemed that what my friend was doing should have been stopped by processes, programs, and protocols no matter where he worked in our country. To put it bluntly, you may end up dead by intervening. The words of a daughter of Dr. First's last victim apply to all those in a position to make a difference.
What do you get paid for? Why do you even have this job? You didn't do what you were supposed to. And I'm like, what the living fuck are you guys looking at?
Thank you for listening. And more importantly, your help in putting pressure on the powers who should be held accountable. More on that to come, including specific suggestions to help listeners in similar realities or those who just want to make a difference, like I do. Although this podcast is about Ben in many ways, it's really for Larice, her family, and the other people Dr. First terrorized.